Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Haldeson from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, live from Fortaleza, Brazil. As always, wherever we're from, open with a prayer. John Coltrane's dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And that you have your will and way. We thank you, Lord, for looking for a vitally God all. We thank you, Lord, that man would say, oh, focus on Park Avenue. Lady once said, you're God Almighty. Coming behind me with you. We want to live through God, the Son of Jesus. And it's his name in this prayer. We thank the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth, live from Fortaleza, Brazil. A little later than all my gang, getting things set up here. Had a great time the other day. We played an interview with international promoter Desico Tomacho Jr. That we'll do that live back in New York. But as always, when we come in and we want to do it, as we bring the man who coined the phrase, the Sports and Death Nation. He will now bring you in to the Sports and Death Nation. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and the only, the incomparable, Mel Smith. Little go-go, a.k.a. Miyasune. Mel, good morning. I will bring you into the Sports and Death Nation. As Jimmy Lennon said last night, Rudy, showtime.
Doc, the Sports and Depth Nation is here. The Sports and Depth panel is here and arriving. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is indeed the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trust in God. We're live from the state of CI, the city of Fortaleza, 250 miles away from the equator, and a cool 85 degrees on a sweet night here on the 22nd now of April. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trusted God Radio Network. Now, some things have happened that were going to happen. We've got Cincinnati Swings, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411. Reavers ain't doggone. He's long gone. Cincinnati C, talk to me.
Doc, it seems like you are worlds from us. I miss you. Sports and Death panel miss you. The Sports and Death Nation misses you here. When I say miss you, we miss you stateside. Like to say good evening to everyone listening. And it's no more J-E-T-S. It's G-O-N-E. Reavers is gone. Reavers is gone.
Hey, Rudy, you like that, huh, Rudy?
Hey, leave it to see, Doc. Leave it to see.
But the NFL, you know, the thing about it too, we want to
Partner, last week was my last show in New York. We had some things happening, but we're here. Got a good 2 hours. If we cut you off, CC, go ahead back to your thought. But, you know, this was going back and forth. Revis was they really didn't want to let him go, and then he's going to stay. And then it happened. The best player who is such an integral part of that Jet defense, it's your platform, Cincinnati C, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411. Let's talk about it. Revis, like you say, and Marvin Gaye say, he's not doggone, he's long gone.
I mean, if you really look at the whole situation, it could turn into a win-win situation for the Jets. In fact, that they do get some value for Revis. They're going to get the 13th overall first pick for the Bucks in the first round of a draft. Hasn't happened with the Jets since 2013, when the Jets had two first-round draft picks. In the top 13 is when they drafted Sean Ellis, who the Jets so eagerly misses because of the offensive line. I mean, he was defensive. He played an integral part in the Jets winning over the New England Patriots when they played on the road in the championship, and they beat Peyton Manning as well. So they also drafted in that year the defensive end Johnny Abraham, who now plays for the Falcons. But when you look at what Revis was looking for, $16 million a year, the Jets just weren't ready to pay that type of money, especially with the uncertainty of his hurt knee. They gave away their power to place a franchise tag upon him. That was
Here's two questions. Had he been healthy, I guess we don't even have this scenario. The question, though, had he been healthy, was he worth the $18 million that he was asking?
$16 million? I think he is worth it, but the problem is, where would you get an NFL team to pay that type of money for a non-quarterback? I mean, that's pretty hard, especially in, you know, with this. That's more or less they save that type of money for the quarterbacks. For the most part, it's always been like that. The NFL, the quarterback is the leader of the team. He's the one that moves the ball. He's the one that calls the shots. And I don't just think that. I don't blame Revis for not asking for that type of money, because this is his most important, his last biggest contract of his career. Of course, you want to get and get as much money as you can, because who else are you going to make that type of money once you get out of the sport? I mean, not everybody could be a Magic Johnson businessman.
And not only that, see, if I may, pardon me for cutting you off, and not only that, see, and Doc, but, you know, like as she said, Doc, and I readily agree, they're only going to pay that kind of money for a quarterback, you know, the head guy that's leading the team, or a very special premium pass rusher who can go out and sack the quarterback. And even then,
that's amazing that you say that. That's really amazing. You talked about the two extremes, you know, the leader, and the thing that the Jets have been lacking, and sort of hurt the Giants too, was, you know, it's just amazing. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio live from Fort Laser, Brazil. And you know, Rooney, just you know, ladies and gentlemen, I say this with pride, admiration, and some ego that you just can't touch by a crew. And the point, you know, and this simple point here, ladies and gentlemen, that he's talked about, you go from one extreme, the man who leads the team, and the man who can lead that pass rush, because it's like you're paying the man the most money who plays the position, and paying the man the most money who gets the guy at that position, Rooney.
I'm sorry. Doc, is, you know, the two premiums, the guy basically who leads the offense and the guy basically who leads the defense. So, as Steve was saying, guys don't want to shell out that kind of max money unless the guy's basically either the quarterback of the team or a very special a premium pass rusher who can go out and basically get the quarterback, especially at crucial times. So those are basically the only – otherwise, guys don't want to spend that kind of money on one ball player when they figure that, you know, that can pay for two, three, four ball players, you know, relatively easily. So
especially
for guys,
when they – I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, not at all. Please, go right ahead, T.
No, go. Finish your point. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that, so, Doc, you know, if you're going to be making, you know, anywhere over $5 million a year, 5, 8, 10, 12 million a year, they want to be a very, very special player. Not that Revis wasn't, but they basically didn't want to put the $10, $15 million a year range on one player, especially in their current state of turmoil.
I mean, you look at the Jets, too. They also are rebuilding. They gutted out the defense. They really didn't rebuild the offense. I mean, you look at this will probably be, I believe it's the sixth or seventh time since the AFL and NFL had the draft that the Jets will have two first-round draft picks. So you go back to as far as 1972, according to the NewYorkJets.com website, you have number 9 in 1972. They had the 20th overall pick where they picked wide receiver Jerome Bartham and the linebacker Mike Taylor that year. 1984, Russell Carter, number 10. Defensive end Ron Furrow. And number 15, 95, Kyle Brady. Pick number 9. Number 16, defensive end Hugh Douglas. 2000, Sean Ellis and Johnny Abraham. 2006, you have number 4, the Brinkshaw Ferguson, 29th overall pick. First round was center Nick Mangold. 2008 was the last time, the most recent, they had two first round draft picks is when they picked number 6 overall linebacker Vernon Golston and 30th all around pick Dustin Keller. So we'll see. It's going to be very interesting this year. Also, they get a conditional fourth-round pick, which most likely will turn into a third-round pick if Revis stays on the Tampa Bay Bucks roster. So it's a lot to see. It's a lot going on in the world of sports. Football, we have the pick. The draft starts Thursday. So we'll see what the Jets are going to do.
Hey, see, let me just say something, not to cut you off, Steve, but you mentioned the name, and pardon me, Doc. Hey, Steve, but before you go on, you mentioned the name of one of the Jets draft that I will put in the top 5 busts of all time, Vernon Golston. What? You know, they're still paying for that draft in him. See, they're still paying for that. Vernon Golston, what a bust.
I mean, you look at general manager Idzik, he's looking to really just rebuild this team, which is going to take a couple of years. You're going to be getting rid of Sanchez's contract.
Well, here's a question. Now, in Doc Stanley Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, live from Fourth Ladies of Brazil on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, a couple of years. In both of you gentlemen's mind here, will Rex Ryan be around in a couple of years, starting with UC?
He may not even be around after next year, depending on how. It's going to be a struggle. You look at the opponents. It's going to be a struggle for the Jets even to get to 500. I mean, they're playing the Bucks, who, I mean, they should start off pretty good this season because they're 9-1 overall against the Buccaneers since 1976. They're 9-1. The only time the Bucks ever beat them was back in 1984. You have to go back nearly 30 years ago when they beat them in Tampa Bay, score 41-21. So, I mean, it's definitely going to be a struggle. If you see the team start off like last year, you may not even see Rex make it through the season. So it's a lot to work on. I'm going to keep my eye, us in the Sports and Deaf Nation, keep an eye this upcoming week, on the draft to see what they're going to do. And to come to Sanchez's defense, he also had his talent gutted around him. So So, I mean, that and in combination with him making bad decisions, not throwing the ball away, a lot of fumbles, I mean, he really regressed. His confidence level is probably at an all-time low. So, you know, you're going to have a very interesting season. I mean, they have a quick turnaround.
Was there any truth to the fact that he's supposed to have been part of that deal to Tampa Bay with Rivers?
I think that was all rumors. I mean, there was nothing to back that up, to prove it.
Uh-huh.
But I think that was something, a lot of speculation on that, and the Jets were not going to get rid of Sanchez at this point. He's their best option until, hey, who knows, they might even draft a quarterback, maybe in the second round, if he's available, the guy from Florida State, Emmanuel. So we'll see.
Well, here's the thing is, I mean, can we say that they weren't going to get rid of him, or maybe using Rooney's point well taken, that they couldn't get rid of him? I mean, is there anybody that really wanted Mark Sanchez?
I don't think so, and I don't think the Jets were willing to eat so much of his contract either to get rid of him.
Okay.
So it comes down to also dollars and cents. Can't lose the fact that this is a business and they're going to do the best for the organization, especially financial-wise. But we'll see. It's going to be a struggle. I mean, it's a very weird schedule if you look at it. They open up against the Bucks at home and then have a quick, short turnaround and head up to New England for a very early Thursday night game. And also, the Jets play Miami, who they normally play. They kind of split their meetings first half of the season, second half, and this year they're meeting in December twice, second half of the season. So it's a lot to watch. They're going to have a big uphill battle. They're playing the 49 Atlanta Falcons at home, who have been boosted up with a lot of not only defensive players, but offensive players as well. They got Steven Jackson, who I think the Jets should have went after. The guy's a beast. He's a beast. When I covered the game in St. Louis last year, he killed us. I mean, that guy is sort of like a junior Marshawn Lynch. That's the way I look at it. But quickly on the news of the New York Giants, Victor Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't signed yet. They haven't come to an agreement. Although he was offered $7 million a year by the Giants and $2.8 million to play in 2013, the two have yet to come to terms on a contract. He had what was very interesting. He had up until midnight Friday to solicit offers from the other teams, which at this point he hasn't done. So I expect the two to hammer out a deal before start a training camp. You should see that before June.
No, you said that before. I mean, it looks like for all intents and purposes. Let's take a quick break here, gentlemen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Up, Blog Talk Radio, live from Fortaleza, Brazil, on the Trust and Guardian Network. And we thank you. Sal E. Braza is the restaurante, and Luis, who owns it, we want to thank him for a great evening. And this portion of Sports and Jeff is brought to you by Sal E. Braza, restaurant here in Fortaleza. Luis, the owner, and in fact, the full portion of this show was brought to you by both Sal E. Braza Restaurant and also Chipito's, who we just had me and Décio Cotamacio Jr. the other night. They are number one. You need to make a phone call. You want something late at night. They deliver. The number, 3261-55555. And Sal E. Braza Restaurant and the owner, Luis, they are bringing you Sports In Depth live from the state of CI and the capital city, Fortaleza. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, live from Fortaleza, Brazil. The issues are here. Delvis is gone. The man who covered half the field by himself has left the field now uncovered. Tiger Woods, got to talk about this. How does a fan call in and have an impact on a decision on a player who is the whole reason why the world watches golf, and you had officials on the field who saw this and didn't see it, and somebody calls in at home? How could this happen? Or is it that it happened to Tiger Woods, saw the fight last night? I don't know. Go ahead.
Difficulty, okay.
Hangs up his fight. Be the last man ever to wear number that was born April 15th, 1947, when Jack Russell Robinson, first black man. On the Justin Budman. Gentlemen, we go back to some thoughts here. We're still talking football.
Let me.
It seems. Go ahead.
Thank you, Doc. I just want to make another statement. I have a lot to say tonight, so I hope you'll bear with me. I'm having a bit of technical difficulty. I may have to call you back on another phone line. But if you can hear me clearly, let me say this, and I also wanted to bounce this off C, since he's also with us. Doc, when we were talking about the Jets and Sanchez, I just wanted to make this point. The reason that he is so hard to stomach is he's not the type of quarterback, at least not up to this point, that makes everyone around him better. Like C said, they gutted basically all of his offensive weapons, wide receivers, no running back to speak of, no great offensive line by any means. He really doesn't have a lot around him, or basically anything around him. And he is not like an RG3 that makes those around him better. So being that's the fact with him, that he doesn't make others around him better, and he basically has nothing around him to begin with, that's what makes him so hard to stomach and why he generally feels so much pressure. Because it's not like he can hand it off to his running back 30 times a game and get substantial yardage and make first downs. I mean, he's the type that he has nothing around him. So if he's the guy that has to do it by itself, he can't do it by himself. And so, as I said, it's not like he's an RG3 where if you take the pass away from him, he can do it with his legs. Or, so that's the reason that makes Sanchez so hard to swallow. And if you'd have told me that this time last year that Tim Tebow would still be on their active roster, I'd say you must be kidding. But the fact of the matter is that both Sanchez, which I knew he was coming back because of that $8.25 million that they owe him this year, and Tim Tebow is still on that active roster. They're trying in vain to try to trade him, and no one wants to give up anything, figuring that, hey, you're going to release him. Why should we give you any type of draft choice? We'll just wait for you to release him and pick him up as a free agent.
I mean, it's a lot to go on. I mean, the Jets are really rebuilding from the ground up. They have a lot of issues. They have a lot of holes to fill. Still have to operate under the salary cap. I think for the most part, they got rid of their biggest, obstacle at this point, Revis. And I wouldn't expect to see Tim Tebow on the roster either. I mean, they brought in David Garrard. I don't even know if he may be cut before the start of the season. I mean, I'm saying, why didn't you just leave Bunnell on the side? You didn't use him anyway.
See, did you say they got the 13th pick overall for Revis? See, did you say they got the 13th pick overall?
Yes, 13th pick. They're going to have two picks, the 9th and the Bucks' 13th overall pick in the first half and a conditional pick next year, 2014. So the Jets have a lot to do. They're rebuilding. They're getting rid of the pieces of the, I guess, the old regime. Sanchez is really the only one left from that, really, with the large contract that they have to worry about. But that's guaranteed. So he's going to be there. They put their time and money into the quarterback. So we'll see what happens with that. Giants shouldn't be too bad this year. They open up against the Cowboys. I think they're going to draft some defense.
Hold on. The Giants open up again this year against the with the Cowboys?
Yes. It's a Sunday night game, I believe.
Yeah, because they opened last year against the Cowboys here, and the first time that the Super Bowl champion had lost their first opening game in some time. Let's go back here, speaking with the Giants, Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, Sports in Depth, Trust in God Radio Network. It seems this thing with Cruz, it seems the situation, it's a one-way street here. He seems to have no other option but to come back to the Giants. They seem to know it. At the same time, Rooney, as I'm talking to Cincinnati C, Mr. NFL 411, it seems like nobody else really wants to deal with him, and that's kind of funny with the kind of talent that he has displayed. I mean, you're thinking there may be some confusion here somewhere along the line. I mean, you would think a guy who's played as well as he's done, broke the record for catches in an All-Star game, you would think there'd be more people. And you hinted 2 weeks ago, Cincinnati C, about the fact that a team like New England may have looked at him. I mean, the question here to both of you guys is, why is nobody else looking at him? And it seems quite obvious that he's going to wind up playing for the Giants or maybe not playing at all. Cincinnati C?
I mean, he hasn't ruled out that he would be in holdout. That hasn't come up. But he played last year for roughly about a half million, 500. Nearly $550,000. So we'll see what happens. He's a restricted free agent, meaning that he can accept offers from other teams. That time has gone and passed. Midnight Friday, the Giants had to match it. So I think they will come to an agreement. I mean, Hakeem Nicks have showed up for the start of the conditioning training, off-season training. He even had a bad year last year. I mean, he played 13 of 16 games, but he also played injured. So that might have dropped his value as well. With Victor Cruz, he had 86 receptions, 1,092 yards, 10 touchdowns in his career. And he's healthy. I mean, he had a couple of drops, but the best of them do drop the ball. I mean, that helped lead to the loss, I believe, in Washington. Besides the penalties, I think they had 9 for 73. But I think you can expect to see Victor Cruz play for the New York Giants. They'll come to terms. I mean,
I'd be anxious to see to see exactly what terms they come to, because, as you said, the scuttlebutt is that his people turned down $7 million a year. Now, my thing is that, and see, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as you said, I think, obviously, that he's a restricted free agent. Now, my understanding was that they have a clause where they can automatically renew him for $2.8 million this year. But if they use that clause, he becomes an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year if they give him an automatic $2.8 renewal. I'm not sure about that. I know, C, you'll brief us on that in a moment. But if that's the case, they automatically renew him for the 2.8, which I believe they can do. I think he becomes an automatic free agent. The thing with the Giants is, Doc and Steve, that I believe they're figuring that he's going to get the hometown discount because he likes playing in New York. He likes the media possibilities and contacts. He likes making those soup commercials. And I think that they're thinking they're going to get some type of a hometown discount because he likes playing and staying in New York. and all the possibilities that come with it.
You I
know,
mean,
all the media possibilities outside commercial possibilities.
I mean, no, you know, for the most part, a lot of players want to play for New York, but also on the other hand, whether it be the Jets or the Giants, you also have to look at it from a Montelli situation. Revis is going to make out as well, because if you're playing in Tampa, which is in the state of Florida, they do not have any income taxes as opposed to playing here in New York, where he paid upwards of like $500,000-$600,000 in taxes. That was one of the things that LeBron James looked at. It was reported of the taxes and different things like that. I mean, you get more bang for your buck.
You know, Cincinnati Steve, to dovetail on that, you know, that's long been a problem with athletes here. Many of the big fights at one time, that was one of the issues that some situations had to come about of Ali Frazier won because of the tax structure, and it was sort of always was sort of a problem for big fights and other athletes coming here, because you're right, the tax structure in New York was so that it took such a heavy bite. I believe there was some deducements for Ali Frazier 1 and 2 because it was that was one of the things that was going to possibly stop the fight from coming here. And once again, just an in-depth perspective beyond what is normally known or looked at on any sports show by this crew here, and with the tax structure that had a lot to do with a lot of athletes too, not only just in football but other sports, who would say, hey, look, you know, I could make maybe $1 million or $2 million more in New York, but at the same time, after the taxes doubled with the kind of mindset they had of the media. Terry Pendleton told me himself, he took $500,000 less per year to go to the Atlanta Braves than subject his family to the eye and ear of the New York media. And as we all know, his first year in Atlanta, he won the batting championship and won the MVP. So financially, it turned out very well for him. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, Sports in Depth on the Trust and Guardian Network, Cincinnati, C-Wings, a.k.a. 411, and Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, with the doctor here, live from Fortaleza, Brazil. And we're talking about, well, the Jets have finally departed with Darrell Revis. On the other hand, it looked like the Giants and Cruz, Victor Cruz, can't seem to get it together. Big fight last night, Canelo Alvarez, unanimous winner over Austin, no doubt Trout, and capturing Trout's belt, also becoming the first man to ever knock Trout off his feet. Trout now goes to 26-1, and we'll talk more about that fight. I don't know. Did you catch that fight, Mooney?
Oh, I have an awful lot to say about that, Doc. I can't wait for that. I have an awful lot to say about that.
Yeah. I just Doc, you know, the 118-109.
Can I just interject just a tad? On behalf of Sports Death Nation, our distinguished host, Doc Stanley, our great panel, we'd just like to reach out and offer our condolences to the family of Pat Summerall, who passed away on the 16th of this month at the age of 82, who, for those who may not know, he played 10 years in the league back in 1952 to 1961 as a kicker, and he played one or two other positions and was an extraordinary play-by-play announcer, not only in football, but golf, tennis. I mean, Pat Summerall, may you rest in peace. And also, we also like to extend our condolences to the families and those killed and injured in the 117th running of the Boston Marathon.
Boston,
and we pay homage to the first responders out there who I believe did a very excellent job. And
a
not
terrific
only the
job.
Responders,
absolutely. Yeah.
The other spectators and doctors and nurses and people out there in cyberspace who helped give information and brought the last terrorist that was found alive, that's brought to justice and in custody, And we take our hats off to you and offer our utmost condolences to those families and to the citizens of Boston.
Well,
yeah,
said,
yeah,
Steve.
Another situation, you know, where we had the shooting way back before Christmas. We had this here, and the words of Harold Weston, sad and touching. We look at man's constant inhumanity to man. You know, it really bothers you. One of the youths, I believe, was 24, 25. You know, this readiness to take your life in lieu of taking other lives. And I've always said, you know, it's just amazing how man has nothing to do with the giving of life, and yet so readily is apropos and ready to do anything to necessitate the deduction of it. And as Cincinnati Sea Wings, a.k.a. Mr. 411, convey to all of you out there, we here at the Sports and Deaf Nation, a term coined by Mel Smith Jr. himself, we have all those in our prayers. We are deeply concerned as both fellow human beings and Americans. And as Pat Summerall, one of the class acts of the business, a former star kicker with the New York Giants, who's on one of the championship teams, and one of the class acts, and one of the true soothing voices of sports, a voice that you heard, but he never got in the way of the play, and he always brought it to you. And you can just say without question, the epitome of a true professional. And we send our condolences to his family, and we are lucky that the world and the sport was a better place because of Pat Summerall. And
well said,
once
Doc.
Again, thank you, Chan.
And he and Madden were a must-listen, Doc. Pardon me. Back in the day, he and Madden were a must-listen. Couldn't wait to hear Madden and Summerall call the game.
Yeah, never got in the way. You know, there are guys in this business who are bigger than the sport, as if you're tuning in to listen to them. Which was one of the downfalls of HBO, of keeping Mike Tyson, as Don and Mike walked away from $100 million deal, because they simply asked that Larry Merchant just not do Mike's fights. And it's amazing that a network, who Don King was the reason why HBO Boxing has ever really, just existed. You know, the things that he did, he taught everybody in that apartment, raised HBO Boxing to the level of it being the number one in all sports, and then for them to turn around and be the ingrates that they were, or showing, as we would say, that Mike and Don was simply just another, and you can throw the N-word in there. And you're talking about sportscasters, watching that fight last night, is there anybody worse than Jim Gray? I mean, you got to wonder, you know.
You're
outside,
right, Doc.
I mean,
tell you
outside
what's great about that, though.
Huh?
No, Doc. I'm going to say you're right about Gray, but I do have to say who was right on top of it. Now, nobody criticizes this guy more than me, but I have to say he was excellent the other night. Paulie Malignaggi, in the sense that, you know, I think Paulie actually is a much better analyst than he is a fighter, to be honest with you, because what he said is absolutely right about Stanley Christian Duo. What fight was he watching, Doc? At the end of eight rounds, he's scoring the fight. I believe it was something on the verge of 80-71 at the end of eight rounds. Like Paulie said, where was that? Where was Christian Duo in the bathroom when the fight was going on?
Well, I think you know, you don't want to go there, but you have to. He's from South Africa, so I think that explains without question why he had Alvarez so far ahead of Trout. Jim Gray, I mean, Gray asked a question that was so asinine, so immaturish. Yeah, he asked the guy, you know, was he disappointed that although he trained for, 12 rounds that he knocked the guy in the first? That's like saying, are you disappointed that you went to the store with a $50 bill and it only cost $36? How could you be? I mean, you know, I remember. I mean, the guy's horrible. I mean, the guy validates that it's not about talent, it's about his complexion. He's been consistently horrible. I remember in the World Series. And the home run was hit by, I see his face, that hit a grand slam home run to win the World Series. And Gray was going to interview him, and he said, hey, look, he says, you know, boom, 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 we and the fellas decided we're not going to talk to you because of the way you treated Pete Rose, and he left. And he just walked away from Gray. He said, hey, you know, listen, and what he wanted to say, he said that they thought it was really unprofessional. They thought it was a low blow. They thought it was sort of, as they say, trifling, the way that he had went at Pete Rose, and the rest of the players and all the baseball had decided in the World Series that they were not going to talk to Jim Gray. And you can see, the question he asked, that, you know, was he disappointed? I mean, are you disappointed that you all needed a single to win the game and you hit a grand slam home run? That's all you need to know. You hit a grand slam home run instead of a single to drive in one run, and are you disappointed? Unquestionably, the worst sportscaster in the history of the business. You know what I mean?
You know, guys, Doc, some guys should clearly, and it's funny that you said that, some guys should clearly not be in the positions that they're in, especially in certain sports where they are particularly bad. It's funny that, you know, great minds think alike. Because when he asked that question, you know, that went through my mind also. It really did. As soon as he said, and I'm saying that he's asking if he's disappointed that he trained so hard it only lasted one round, as if the guy would have said, no, I need more work. I mean, that's what sparring partners are for, okay? In the real fight, you want to get guys out there and go about your business. You know, it's funny. You know, what's funny about that, Doc, is they have these guys as so-called play-by-player announcers or analysts. And it's clear that they've never even thought of playing the sport.
I remember that they did talk about back when Tommy Smith and John Carlos, when they made that stand back in 1968. And the people, Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network, live before the Ladies of Brazil. And, you know, people don't understand that Carlos and Smith were betrayed. The whole Olympics that year was going to be a movement in which the black athletes stood up, showed the world that they were unified, and they were going to show the world that they were disenchanted with their role in the way America treated African American. Now, little is ever mentioned that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar boycotted the Olympics for that reason. Kareem did not go for that reason. And Smith and Carlos were sort of, like I said, they were betrayed because there's sort of been a movement up in totality, and they wind up being single-handedly, like I said, the bad guys. And I remember they said that it was Brent Musburger who had the audacity to say that they acted like black stormtroopers. Black stormtroopers. The bunny. Like black stormtroopers.
And he said, because I heard it, when they did a documentary on that, they actually showed that clip of Musburger. He said that and a bunch of other derogatory things about how they should be suspended from the Olympic teams, have the medals taken away, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's not like you're just coming up with stuff. Yeah, Musburger said it. I heard him say it. I saw the tape of him saying it. And, you wouldn't expect anything less from a guy like Musburger to begin with.
Yeah, the bunny. I mean, him and Gray should be, they both should be doing the International Tilly Weeks Championship someplace in Uganda someplace. You know what I mean? Live.
I mean, it's clear they know nothing of what they're talking about. Gray probably never had a fight of any type of competitive nature in his life. You start to wonder, Doc, where they get these guys from and how they attain their position when they have
so many other people who are so much more qualified.
You know,
don't want to mention names. You got a guy on the ad who's known to be is a known wife beater. You got another guy who's a known alcoholic. Okay, and we're not saying we're looking for perfection, but you know it's clearly, as Ali say, they're there because they are the complexion of the connection in the case. How could Art Rush Jr. not have had a job someplace in radio, not necessarily African-American radio, because it was Art Rush Jr. who brought sports talk radio into its existence. He was the Columbus, okay? He was the Jackie Robinson, America's Best Future. It was Art Rush Jr. who brought sports talk radio into existence, and there was a time where he had not only the number one sports show on ABC, his radio show was the number one radio show on ABC Radio, PEROI, period. And yet, you look around, and how could Art Rush Jr. had ever been in a position for what he did for radio in America and the world, and he'd be unemployed? But then again, not the complexion of the connection. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust of God Radio Network, live from Fortaleza, Brazil. It is Cincinnati C, a.k.a. 411's NFL, and none other than Mel Cosell Jr. here live with me. Will be another good 15, 20 minutes, and I know somewhere online there's going to be some WWF talk. But, Rooney, let's go to that fight last night. I mean, 118-109. Yeah, I it seemed to me that after I watched the fight with here in Brazil in Fortaleza with the number one international promoter in Brazil, Décio Couto Machado Jr. And Décio said something very interesting. He said, "You know what? He thought the fight was a draw. I thought Trout pulled it out. Trout came back and won the knockdown round, but it seemed they acted as if Alvarez knocked him out. I mean, Alvarez knew at the end of the fight they were giving him the belts already before they made the announcement. I mean, Alvarez showed me some good defense. Alvarez, he tied, but he came back. But I didn't think he ran away with that fight. We're going to talk to Lady A when we get backstage. I didn't see him running away with that fight, but I just didn't understand. It's amazing the people who could have saw the 118-109 here for Alvarez and yet sniffed it the same way when back in New York when Trout just beat Cotto half to death. But it seemed like, too, Rooney, that there was something wrong with Trout. He was not the same guy
in the ring last night. Good ups to you, Doc, for spotting that. Yeah, he did not have the energy that he had in the Cotto fight. He didn't look as focused as the Cotto. Something was definitely missing. Good ups by you, Doc, because I noticed that as the fight progressed. It didn't look like the same guy. He didn't look like he had the focus. He wasn't as sharp. He didn't look like he had the energy. He was starting to tire as the fight went along. Like you said, Doc, he just did not, to me, look like the same guy that we saw in the Cotto fight.
No whatsoever. The simple thing that I noticed of the ability that he did in Cotto, of getting inside, tying Cotto up, and leaning on him, didn't do this against Alvarez. Didn't get inside, didn't lean, didn't hold, even three or four times heading against the rope. I couldn't understand his inability to throw the body shots and uppercuts instead of going for the head.
Doc. Good job by you. Good job. Good observation. Yes. I know something, Doc. I don't want to get all the lefties mad at me, but the guy Trout the other day to me looked like a typical southpaw, getting hit with lead right hands, getting hit with lead uppercuts, getting hit with left hooks, pawing with the jab instead of putting it forcefully in there. With pot shots, one punch pot shots. He didn't look like the same guy. Now, I'm going to say that Alvarez, I will give him credit, he was much more elusive than I thought that he would be. Much better body movement than I thought that he would have. Much, much more difficult to hit. He did a much better job of getting inside than I thought that he would. He was better with the jab than I thought that he would be. Like you said, Doc, and like I said, I noticed that after the first four or five rounds, Trout looked like he was missing something. He didn't look like he had the strength. The jab was a pawing jab, not the ramrod jab. He failed to keep Alvarez at the end of the jab, as he did so much better against Cotto. Like you said, not nearly enough body work as he did in the Cotto fight. Not nearly enough a nation. Well, the thing that really struck me about this, Doc, was he didn't fight tall. He didn't fight big last night. He, you know, for his height and reach advantage, he did not use it in the way that he used it against Cotto. He couldn't keep Alvarez at the end of the jab. He missed an awful lot of shots. He wasn't accurate yesterday. He just seemingly wasn't sharp yesterday. Now, as far as the fight itself, Doc, I myself, as you said, I mean, he clearly landed more punches throughout the fight. There's no question about that. My problem with him, though, was...
He landed more and he threw more, Rooney. He landed more and threw more.
Yeah, my problem with him, though, Doc, and you, you know, been in show business, and so has C, in the sense that you have to know your audience. So he may have won the fight as far as volume of punches and landing more, but he didn't do enough to win the fight. And obviously, you and C know what I mean when I say that. He may have actually won the fight as far as volume of punches, but knowing what that audience was and what he was facing, he didn't do enough to win. I mean, he would throw three or four shots, Doc. He would throw three or four punches and let Carmelo come back and win the fight by landing one big shot. And that seemed to be the nature of the fight throughout the fight. He would land three or four tappy kind of punches, kind of mediocre shots.
Pity pat.
To let this guy steal the round by landing one big, colorful Kodak moment. So, you know, that didn't help his cause.
Yeah, well, you know, evidently, I think Chris Cotto just told us basically how the fight was going to be scored, how it was going to be seen. Look at the scores that I had from that fight last night. Let's look at it. 115 to 112. So if you take away the knockdown, you'd have had a 114-113 there. Then you had 116-111, and that's a 115-112. And then 118-109. So that's a 117-110. I mean, the 118-109 is just something that, you know, that seeing eye dog could have seen. The 115-112 is kind of in the ballpark. Even the 116-111 is just way off. I mean, those last two scorecards, the 116-111, 118-109, you just got to – it's amazing how nobody, unless I've said anything, said anything about it. Trout, you take your hat off to him. You know, he said Alvarez is just a better man. He was bigger. He was stronger. He was quicker. He goes, he dropped to 26-1-0, showed a lot of class. Marion B. Boykin, the great Marion B. Boykin, greatest boxing man of our time, says he's an ultimate measure of a champion. What he does when he gets up after getting knocked down, and Trout Dawnshaw got up, and what he does after the loss. You know, Rooney, it seemed to me like, too, that Trout, maybe that area of the ring was wet because he seemed to slip and slide. And he really didn't seem to be affected or hurt by the punch. I don't know if it was, you know, that area was wet. But it seemed like he was more sliding than it was a knockdown. I mean, it definitely got hit straight right hand, bam, right on the money. But it seemed that Trout more so was slipping and falling, more so from slipping and falling than from the punch. Your observation, Rooney?
You know something, that's funny. Again, big ups to you, because I was thinking that when he went down from that, you know, because he actually got hit with a lot harder shots during the course of that fight than the one that he got dropped with. But as you said, in the course of getting hit, his legs kind of did the cha-cha-cha, you know, at the same time. As you know, he's kind of off balance. And you know, kind of, it was a delayed reaction, because he didn't get he didn't go down as he got hit with the shot. He got hit with the shot, legs kind of did the tango, and then he kind of went down in sort of a delayed reaction thing. So, you know, you're right, because during the course of that fight, he got hit with much bigger shots than that, and seemingly had no reaction to it. As I said, though, you know, his problem was, Doc, and I got to tell you, I didn't see the sense of urgency from round one through round 12. As you know, and as I said, you've been in, you know, obviously in show business and done, I've seen you perform, Doc. You know, you have to know your crowd. You have to know where you're performing. You have to know your crowd. And to me, he didn't go into that Rumble with the sense of urgency that I thought he would. I thought he would try to go in. He tried to establish the jab for a while, but instead of it being one of those kind of ramrod, bust you up, make you pay when you come in kind of jab, it was more of a flickering kind of get away fly, you know, kind of jab. So that did not
support. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line, Rooney, is what we both said. The Austin Trout against Alvarez last night was not the same guy against Miguel Cotto earlier part
absolutely
of this year.
Not.
And that's
absolutely
just,
not that.
Yeah. And so that's the question I'd like to ask him. You know, what happened? Did you leave your other body back in New York? It just wasn't the same guy. I think if you listen to his post-game comments, if there's anything wrong with him, he would not use it as an excuse. If there's any sort of in preparation that was deleted because of whatever reason, he did not use that excuse.
And the way that you know that, you know, he wasn't the same guy was because there were literally times during the fight where Alvarez, you could see, was clearly tired and kind of took parts of various rounds off, and Trout couldn't take advantage of it. I mean, there was a time when the guy literally dropped his hands and started doing the boogaloo right in front of him, and Trout couldn't hit him.
Yeah. Couldn't hit him or wouldn't hit him. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, Trust in God, live from Fort de Laser, Brazil. Once again, we're telling you it's Chipitos and also number one son. We're going to shoot back to football here. We're going to go back to golf. Yeah, and something hit me as I came here. You know, Tiger Woods was 4 off when he finished at the Masters. And it's I had heard this earlier before boarding the plane that Monday night, and it was something that had to be a lot of merit. And you know, how does a fan, first of all, pick up, which was not picked up? Now, I've long said this is about instant replay, but the thing that you have to question here is how do they call in to Augusta? I mean, you've got to say, you know what? Okay, look, thanks a lot, very much. Something we'll be aware of the next time, and you know, keen observation. But how in the hell do you the next day implement any kind of infraction against? Hold on, anybody, but against Tiger Woods, who is the whole reason why anybody is watching golf in the first place. But number two is, isn't it kind of a little too late? I mean, but you're telling me that Augusta National, okay, the prestigious Masters, the most renowned of the four majors, who had people on site, okay, and we're talking about also the guys, the announcers, and you mean to tell me that this fan's credibility was such that you used that against Tiger Woods? What are you telling me? Would they done that against Jack Nicklaus? Would they done that against Arnold Palmer? This person called in and told you what you should have known, supposed to didn't know, and you implemented an infraction against Tiger Woods? And incidentally, Tiger Woods just happens to be, he may say cannibal Asian, but he's black. I mean, to me, Augusta lost a lot of credibility and validated the old good old boy racist mindset always every day. I mean, you know, gentlemen, talk to me.
That's the nature of golf to begin with, Doc. I mean, you know the thing. I mean, you know, good old boy network, and especially where they're at in the whole nine. I'm going to say this, then I have to take a quick 2-minute break, Doc, in which I'll be right back. But I have to step away for 2 minutes. But that's the equivalent of me calling the NBA in the Garden the other day with the Boston and the Knicks and saying, that's the wrong interpretation of the rules. That foul should not have been called on Carmelo because of such and such and such. when he had established position and them changing it. As I call it, you know, something he was out of the, you know, out of the, you know, the circle in there. And, you know, that was an offensive foul instead of the other way. I mean, I don't follow golf at all, quite frankly, because it's really not my thing. To me, it's like watching grass grow. But I actually did hear obviously about the controversy surrounding that, and the fact that someone could call into the rules committee people there, a caller, not even an active participant that's there as we speak, is the stuff of fairy tales almost. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And not only that, there were some guys who had the audacity to say that Tiger should have been disqualified. I mean, you know, you guys are on the green because of Tiger. Cincinnati Sting, see Mr. 401. I mean, your thoughts, reaction to that?
It definitely brings into question of the credibility of who's supposed to be policing the golfing rules and regulations. That what does that say about the officials that are there on the scene? You telling me they're not competent enough to pick up a problem, as per se, or as someone said that he may have cheated? You're going to take information from someone that calls in? I mean, it just calls into some questions there, the legitimacy of how the sport is governed, the reliability of the officials that are on the scene. I mean, come on, this is not American Idol where you call in and you vote. I mean, you're talking about worldwide professional golf. So it definitely brings into some questions there that someone's watching TV as there are millions and millions of people watching it for Tiger. And I'll say that speaking from personal experience, I don't watch unless Tiger's playing.
That is really said, the point well taken. I mean, the fact that, I mean, and we're not saying Tiger's looking for any special treatment, but we're also going to say he damn sure deserves it. But the thing, if we just cut it right down to that great song, The Real Nitty Gritty, is how does somebody call in, even if they called in the same day, but they called in the next day? I mean, you know, as the most prestigious golf tournament on the planet, as having my supposedly expert people on site, is a situation I would have said, well, hey, you know, thank you very much. It's something we'll be more aware of, but as of now, we are quite sure that our assessment is the assessment, but thank you for your call. It's, you know, you just look into the situation. I mean, you know, do all these things happenstance? I mean, it happened to be Tiger Woods. I mean, what a coincidence. I mean, they're still looking to pardon in America a dead Jack Johnson. You know, they don't want to. Excuse me, Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio, Sports and Death on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. I mean, you know, the Mann Act was implemented by the United States government. The United States government came up with the Mann Act to get Jack Johnson. And once again, what a coincidence. He happened to be a black fighter, and who a man who they still won't pardon in death. And not that Jack gives a damn. But it was just something, Cincinnati C.A.K., Mr. NFL 411, that I said, well, wait a minute. You know, it was just – and how could that – and then to hear certain players tell him he should have just qualified as if Tiger has been cheating all along. 14 majors, more than anybody else in Jack Nicklaus. He's the number one golfer in the world again. Has won 3 times on the tour, more than anybody else. And, you know, it's as if Tiger needs to cheat. But the thing that you brought up, it was like they weren't worried about what they would look like. They weren't worried about anybody else who would get hurt in this melee, as if it was, hey, we got Tiger. You know what I mean? That seemed to be the prize. That seemed to be the trophy. And then with anything else or any other consequences that may come about, which was the case. But, I mean, it's a story you haven't heard because the press is non well, non-African American to one period and non-truthful. So, but it, I mean, story should have been, that should have been the whole story. As it turned out, that in itself was the biggest story in the masses. But you just got to say, how does this happen that somebody can call in? Like you said, like Rooney's being facetious. Hey, you know, let's go back to the third quarter. Knicks down by two. We got that tough call. You know, if you look at the termination rule, and it's just crazy. It just, it opens up a door that can lead to a lot of things, unless the door is only going to be open, Cincinnati C, to Tiger Woods.
I mean, it's definitely obvious when you're at the top of the game. You have to question why and how these rules are applied and to whom they apply to. Are they applied across the spectrum to every athlete? I mean, he's always going to be the highest draw. Tiger Woods brought the game of golf back to a lustrous game. Now, I mean, everyone's out there on the court playing, older ladies. Doesn't make a difference, ethnic background or monetarily what you have. I mean, he just brought life back into the game of golf, just like Tyson brought into the game of boxing. So, I mean, it's definitely something to monitor, to look at. Listen, we have to move on to the next major in the golf world.
Yeah, next tournament, next game, that should be coming up pretty soon. We got the British Open, we got the U.S. Open, and the PGA. But as Rooney would say, point well taken by us stopping and listening to it and sad and touching the way it came down. And another issue we've got to look at here now, they told us that Derek Jeter would be back for opening day. Then they told us Derek Jeter will be back a few days after opening day. And now the latest
word is that Derek Jeter. I think he's going to miss the year, Doc. I really do. I think he's going to be out for the year. I know they expect him after the All-Star break. But I got to tell you, Doc, after all this time and then they find another fracture of the ankle, I got to tell you, Doc, and it's funny because, you know, I like Derek a whole lot as a ball player. He always hustles. He's a winner. He comes to play. The thing about it is, though, Daga, they're talking about they are hoping that he'll be back around the All-Star break or slightly thereafter. And I hope that I'm wrong, but I got to tell you, Doc, I'm starting to think that he may miss the entire season.
You know, Derek Tennyson Jeter. What did you say?
Wings? I think that he's going to miss. I think that Jeter might miss the whole season just as the only person in the league to wear number 42, the last person in the league to wear 42,
yeah.
Mariano. I mean, and this is something me and Doc talked about before when we went to that game last year. We were on the first baseline, and I said that Derek Jeter seems to have that funny gait anyway with his left ankle. He walks, he seems to favor that left ankle anyway, and it doesn't help the fact that he's in his upper 30s. You take a longer time to heal. I don't see him playing, especially on that ankle. I mean, that's something you need just to play that position of shortstop.
Yeah.
You got to be on the best of health. You have to turn that ankle sort of like a front tire handlebars of a bike. You have to have that flexibility, especially at that position.
And if they do bring Derek back, I could see him playing a more of a DH role than rather, as you said, rather than have to play that very, very high, very demanding position of shortstop. If he does come back after the All-Star break, I can see them DHing him.
What about Kobe Bryant?
That was our next move. Go ahead, Wings, on Kobe.
I mean, Kobe, you see Rasheed Wallace, he retired also. I mean, he seemed to favor that foot as well, even though they said he was back to health. But when you get those type of injuries, especially at that age, it just never really heals the same. I mean, everyone gauging it on Adrian Peterson, the devastating injury he had and how he healed, that's definitely an anomaly. I mean, some...
Really is.
Yeah, that was definitely an exception, not the rule. And we're hoping, as Rooney spoke his name earlier, that RG3 can be sort of, if not in that top class with AJ, but right there, because as we talked last year, John, for all intents and purposes, when we heard about Peterson's injury, knowing how it had been one so devastating to an athlete's career, no way, shape, or form did we expect Peterson to be back at the level of which he was this year. And that was beyond what we could comprehend. And the hope here is that RG3 can be, but what we may be seeing in Derek Sanders and Jeter, this could be it. I mean, you're 39 years old. He's been playing shortstop for a lot longer than most people of his age. And, you know, you can't go out there and do certain things that position, that other position will allow. I don't think he'll be a first baseman. I think we may see as Yogi would say, a deja vu all over again. If he doesn't play this year, he does like Mariano, maybe, and comes back next year and may say sayonara. You know, doesn't want to go out this particular way. Maybe we'll go out. But, I mean, as we understand now, Jeter is the only Yankee to win an All-Star Game MVP, and he's the only Yankee ever to get 3,000 base hit. I told Derek, said it to his face, behind his back, he wears the right number two. Derek Jeter, second to none as a player, as a person. He's everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be and everything that Mickey Mantle wasn't.
Doc, it's funny you should talk about Jeter, because another guy who's been great and very classy in his tenure, and you just mentioned him, was the great Mariano Rivera. And starting next year when he is no longer with the Yankees, and whoever, this is going to be a tough act to follow, but whether the Yankee closer is next year, when he starts, when he blows, whatever amount of saves that he's obviously, whoever that is going to blow, folks are going to say, well, wow, we had Mariano. I mean, they bet to enjoy him this last year that they have him, because you will not see the likes of him again anytime soon, if ever, okay? This is the type of guy that would come in, basically, and you probably, you know, Doc, it's rare that when a guy comes in, you usually figure game over. I mean, that shows how great a guy is. You know, we don't usually stop to think of that. And we're reporters who have covered these people live. But the average fan just, you know, doesn't know how difficult it is when a guy comes in and he basically say, game over. Game over.
Yeah, well, I remember two things about Willie Mays, among the many things. And Cleek Boyer talked about in the 1962 World Series, he came up, hit a shot, center field. He starts to run down the first base, and he says, wait a minute, what am I running for? He's out there. You know what I mean? Meaning Willie Mays. And I remember Mays dropped the fly ball. It made the front page of the Daily News across the country. The front page of the Daily News, Willie Mays dropped the fly ball. And we're never going to see a Derek Jeter again because of he's cut from that cloth of some of the old-timers, and we're never going to see Rivera again. And then one thing for sure, we'll never see anybody else except on the days that Jackie Robinson saluted with number 42. Gentlemen, real quickly in our closing minutes, what do you guys got for us for the WWF?
You want to start that, C, or should we both? You know, Doc, you have to give us more. We got to give more time. Because she and I have stuff that would just fill book after book after book. See, we both have done the wrestling experience. And I just want to say this, Doc, as far as WWF and wrestling in particular, and I'm sure C will agree with me, okay? The fans, even though they watch it and they think they know, unless you've actually been in that ring, you have no idea of the actual physicality, the literal beating, both literally and figuratively, that those guys take for our enjoyment, okay? They don't call wrestling when the guys get thrown into the ring and body slammed. We don't call those falls. We call those taking bumps. because that's what they cause, and that's how it feels. Okay? Or the average fan be like, oh, he's getting slammed to the floor or slammed to the mat, and they throw each other around and take. No, we don't call those falls in wrestling, okay? We call them bumps because that's what they leave, bumps and lumps, and that's how it feels, and you're getting slammed. Bang, zoom, pow. See? In the back ponytail on that?
Well, I must say, there's a reason why I call them professionals. The highest mortality rate amongst professional athletes, the wrestlers die at such an alarming young age. When I mean young, under the age of 50, 55, wrestlers have the biggest death ratio than any other sport. It's not easy, not only stepping into that square circle, but the training, the toll that it takes on your body when you're flying from city to city or driving from city to city, and you're taking that punishment day in and day out. You have to keep up that physique. It's very, very difficult to also perform. A lot of these guys wrestle while they're injured, for the most part, and they take a bruising physically, mentally. Take a lot of painkillers. You have a wrestler like Superstar Billy Graham who admitted, to the best of my knowledge, that he did use steroids.
Oh, all kinds of juice in the Superstar. He had all kinds of juice flowing through those veins. And you know something,
Doc?
One of the things that shocked me the most about wrestling, I'll make this brief, I know we're just about out of time, but the thing that I know she will concur is, I used to say, well, why do the wrestlers get so upset when these guys are saying it's fake, it's phony, or why do they get upset? Everybody knows it's a show. Well, when the first time I got in the ring, I found out very quickly and got a whole new respect for what they do, because there's a lot more realism going on in that ring than anyone would ever realize unless you've been in there with those guys. And I used to say, Well, why do these guys get so upset? Everybody knows it's a big show. You know, why do these guys get their noses all out of joint? Now I know why, Doc, because there's a lot of realism going on, a lot of very, very real shots you take. The falls are real, and it takes a very, very certain type of person with a very high threshold of pain to be able to do that for a living.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. I mean, I think the bigger they are, more pain they go through. I mean, you just look at we talk about football players with the impact injuries. You look at wrestlers such as Eddie Guerrero.
Late Eddie Guerrero, yeah.
Late Eddie Guerrero to alcohol usage, usage. It just goes on and on and on with the abuse of painkillers. I mean, that is a tough, tough business. Don't have a union. They're like the boxers.
Yeah. And what's so funny about that, Doc, is the former governor, of Arkansas, Jesse the Body Ventura, actually would go around trying to get, you know, the guys to get together and start some type of union. And he said that Hulk Hogan ratted on him to Vince McMahon and stuff, and would go and say, Jesse's talking union again. So he said he never thought that would be Hulk that basically ratted on him, but he had heard, you know, during their wrestling days, it was Hulk going to McMahon and company and saying, is Jesse the back talking union? But, you know, Doc, the fact of the matter is that just recently, they inducted the great, and I mean great. I've seen many of his performances, and I can say this, the great Bruno Sammartino at this 29th of WrestleMania at Madison Square Garden where the induction took place. And I have to tell you, Doc, that even though it's considered entertainment and you can't find a betting line in Vegas, in many ways Bruno really was the champion in the sense that in his day he had to work with legitimate tough guys. 1 month you got Killer Kowalski coming in. The next month you got Freddie Blassie coming in. The next month he's working with Bulldog Brower. The next month he's working with Waldo Von Erich. The next month you got superstar Billy Graham coming in. The next month he's working with Ivan Koloff. I mean, Doc, you are talking about Partner Expression, some kick-ass guys, and you're working with every entity, every one of these guys who are legitimate, and I mean legitimate tough guys. So in many ways, Doc, he really was the champion because every month he had a tougher and tougher guy coming in to work with every month.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that.
I mean, see, the next month you got George the Animal Steel coming in, which I saw a couple of those rumbles with George, and they were breathtaking. As I said, superstar Billy Graham, I saw that one. Nikolai Volkoff, you know, Doc. His claim to fame was to show how strong the, and I met him, and I believe actually I had a big autograph from Nick one time because, you know, I was talking to him about his rumblings with Bruno and stuff. You know, like his thing to show how strong he is, I think he's about 6'5", about really close to 300. Hey, Doc, every week, Blassie would have him crush an apple with both hands. He'd have one in one hand and one in the other, and literally crush them into pulp to show the strength of Nikolai Volkoff. I mean, you're talking about some serious, serious guys that you had. And you had to have the respect of those guys, Doc. She's done some, been in that ring. And when you are the champion, you have to really have the respect of those guys. And when all of those legitimate tough guys, you have their respect, you're a heck of an athlete and a heck of a human being. Because those are the legitimate tough guys. The Blassies, the Kowalskis, the Koloffs. Really, really legitimate tough guys. So now I have quite an understanding and a whole new respect for what those guys do because it's brutally physical. And like C said, if you have if you're a superstar of that means you have to have the travel. I mean, the travel, those guys are on the road 300, 320 days a year easily.
So no, you mentioned travel. You mentioned travel, and I think today's fan doesn't understand the effect that it has on athletes in every venue. I mean, you know, in the old days in baseball, you traveled one way. You traveled on train, and the farthest west you went was St. Louis. You played a consistency of day games, and that repetition, that routine was advantageous to help. I mean, you played a 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock game every day here. You know, we fly into New York. We do a 7:30 night game on Friday. Then we do this day game on Monday, on Saturday. And then maybe there was a time, you did another day game on Sunday. But now with night baseball, we may do back-to-back nights Friday, Saturday, and do a Sunday matinee. Or we may do Friday night, play a day game on Saturday, and come back and do a night game. Then you run a plane, and you're flying out to Arizona. And if people understand, and I didn't realize at his funeral how much my third mentor and like a father to me in this business, Art Rush, didn't like flying. You know, flying. You know, saving time is one thing, and giving time is another. And flight saves time, but it's really a disadvantage to the body. And you have to kind of understand what this does to today's athletes, especially the constant flying of baseball, basketball players. I think football players are the one guys flying time wise. It doesn't hurt them because you only fly once a week. You know, you make that once a week flight if you're going to do a road game. Baseball players, I mean, they get a lot of time to rest on the bench, but per se, they do a lot of flying. So if you look at athletes, I think that has the best is baseball players because, you know, you come in town and you're going to play Friday, Saturday, Sunday in New York. You know, you're going to stay in one city for two or three days in a row. But you look at the football player who only flies one time, one twice, who could fly into the city and fly back. But the overall populace of athletes, the point you brought about wrestlers, the same thing that can be said of all other athletes is, you know, flying. And you look back in the old days of baseball. In fact, you know, when train was the mode of travel for every venue, it was a really more relaxing and conducive, I imagine, to a health standpoint of view, as opposed to flying today. Gents?
Well, you know something, Doc? One of the great hardcore, just before we close, one of the great hardcore legends that I know C is familiar with, the great and truly hardcore Terry Funk, once said hardcore legend, all kinds of just crazy matches, Silk Cage and Fire, and I mean, way back in the days when guys would do anything to draw fans, was a hardcore legend. You know, he once said, Doc, that when he was with the then WWWF, which is the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, now known as WWE, that they were once, the whole company, that they were once on the road for 65 straight days. And these guys who are already aggressive to begin with, okay, already very large and aggressive to begin with, We're absolutely crazy. The guys are going out of their minds on the road 65 straight days.
Yeah, I mean, and you talk about, and part of that too, if we look at how travel by train was much more conducive and comfortable, you look at the Negro League players who were driving around the country by bus and, you know, playing two or three games in a day. I mean, you're doing the 1 o'clock game in some part of St. Louis, and then you later on another part of the state doing a 5 o'clock game, you know, a night game. You know, it's you look back at how the home of the wear and tear travel can bring to the body. That's why a lot of teams, if they can, in today's sports, if they can get their own chartered plane, buy their own plane, it's so helpful. Don King, a lot of people don't know, but Don King has his own private plane. DK, I think 27 years ago, purchased his own plane, which allowed him a more ready availability to get to other cities. I mean, because they say, if Don thinks of an idea, what it's, let's say here it's 7-3 in Brazil, he thinks of an idea. Well, Don's ready to fly about 6 o'clock in the morning. Only thing is that sometimes they can't get the runway space, but there's no harder worker than Don King. Look at some of the names on our board today, too. We had Tiger Woods. We talked about that situation, but also saluting Tiger as he's number one golfer in the world. Again, Derek Sanderson Jr. may not play again until after the All-Star game. Mariano Rivera, enough said there, his last go-round. The last man to wear number 42. Jackie Robinson, the man who number 42 is recognized for. Brand new movie out with him. Harrison Ford playing Branch Rookie. Always salute the lovely Rachel Robinson, Carmelo Anthony. Enough can be said. Great year. Here's a guy that does get a lot of credit for leading one of the fine teams of basketball into the playoffs. Sergio Martinez. Everybody's talking about Mayweather. Everybody's talking about Pacquiao. Everybody's talking about Alvarez. Everybody's talking about, Sergio Martinez is still the undisputed middleweight champion of the world. Donated $100,000 for a situation in his country. He's going to fight for the first time ever in his country of Argentina, and it was the president of the country that made the announcement for a press conference that this great champion, if you ever met a wonderful human being, does a lot for domestic violence, believes so much in the credo of Muhammad Ali's service to others, doing what you pay for your room here on earth. You can never talk enough about Ali, as you know. Last month, still sad and touching. In the words of Harold Weston, and Rooney would say, Doc, a point well taken. Nobody recognized March 8, 1971, Ali Frazier won. Smoking Joe Frazier. Ali, Joe Frazier, the first man to beat Muhammad Ali in the greatest fight in the history of mankind twice in our lifetime. In the history of man, there have been two events where wars were stopped to see special people perform. Ali Frazier won. Ali and Joe Frazier and Pelé. So no one needed to be said. Also up on the board, Serena Williams, oldest female to regain the number one ranking in the history of women's tennis. Take your hats off to LeBron James and his Heat as they've gotten back to the number one seed. They will be defending their championship. Kobe Bryant, is he too, like Derek Sanderson Jeter, on his way out Kobe's been one of the great players in the game, one of the great competitors, one of the great champions, a person disliked by many because of whatever reason, but the bottom line, he's got 5 world championship rings. He's got injured. We don't know how bad it's going to be. As we know, it has been a situation that we've heard that he's done for the season. The question is, he done for his career? Well, we see a similarity in him as we've seen with Derek. Going to be back opening day, going to be back in a little while. Now not back after the All-Star game, but we want to salute some of the great players, Derek Sanders and Jeter. Not haven't heard any more about Larry Holmes, just stunned. Heard Larry was sick. You would think the second longest reign of any heavyweight championship ever. Heavyweight champ, haven't heard any more about Larry Holmes. Those are the names up on the board. You know the names here. 2 of the legendary iconic figures of the renowned posse, with Deirdre Shula from Blake Radio. And we say hello to them, as they will always be family. We miss them dearly. We love them dearly. Neil, Blake, Deirdre Shula, all part of that posse out there. You know, January, Cincinnati C and Rooney, I was at the Bat Dinner, and they have a host of players up there signing autographs. I was really stunned at the attitude of Louis Aparicio, who wouldn't. But as I got near George Foster, Chris Chandler said, "Hey, Doc." And as I was talking, George Foster said, "That sounds like the guy on the radio." I said, "Mr. Foster, I am the guy on the radio, Doc Stanley. We're in the posse. Thank you very much for being on the show." But it was just so funny to hear somebody say that, you know, Rooney, and see what he said. He said, "He sounds like the guy on the radio." You know what I mean? So I guess whatever I sound like in life, I sound like the same on the radio. I guess that must be a good thing.
You know, I got to say this before we go off the air, Doc. You know, you know, the fans don't really know this, but you are just much, much too modest. And I know C will agree with me on this. You know, we've covered many, many items, Doc, with you there. Football games, basketball games, boxing matches. And you know something? You hobnob and walk among the greats, and they all acknowledge you. And, you know, you always just play it off like, hey, you know, everybody knows who Doc is. Everybody respects your work, Doc. And you are as humble with it as any other star that I've ever met and ever known. So I just want to thank you for being who you are, Doc. As humble a superstar as anyone has ever met.
And well, I did know that fact.
Well, man, you guys like Michael Jackson, you guys embarrass me. I just all the praise and honor goes to God, and I have to be what I am. Well, because of, you know, people like you. My mom said, only what you do for Christ will last. But it's to others I am somebody, man. You guys are at that same plateau, man. Rooney, I remember Rooney. I mean, you know, me and Rooney, we've had some fun. I just remember me and Rooney consoling Lennox Lewis' mother, you know, and Rooney,
yeah,
down there,
Mrs. Lewis,
son, there wiping away tears from the lady. One of the great things I've heard, and I'll share it with you. I remember, buddy, one of the great comments of all time, Julio Rodriguez, and he said that he was telling the guy who was going to the wedding that I knew Derek Jeter, and supposedly the guy went to the wedding and somehow got in a conversation with Derek. You know, me and Derek have been buddies for a long time. And he asked Derek, did you know who Doc Stanley was? And supposedly the story goes that Derek said, "Doc Stanley?" He said, "Everybody knows Doc Stanley." So I guess that could maybe credo some of the things that you said there. But, I mean, you know, it just blessed. We were in a special era. I've had some special people mentor me. But more important, I have special people around me, like you people, man. You know, it's just, I can't say enough, you know, in the invocation you guys have been in, what you guys bring to the table. Because you've got to have the right people around you. And the main thing is that of all the things I am in life, it's B-L-E-S-S-E-D. I'm blessed. I'm blessed by God beyond what I can comprehend. That one of my favorite verses is that great line in Psalms 8. Third, what is man that God is mindful of him? In my case, what is Melvin that God is mindful of him? And, you know, and just been, like I said, just just blessed, you know, to be here, to be among y'all, to be where I'm at my whole life. And yeah, thanks so much, you know, for the compliments. And, you know, you got to understand, it's the great line about Gail says, God is first, my family and friends are second, I am third, you know. And then I've come up short. You know, at times I look like a genius, and times if I can validate I'm not. But, you know, and this is so much so special, because it's about us bringing something to society in our service, helping. And you guys, the things, what you bring from the WWF, Rooney, now you talk about your just natural renaissance ability. And Cincinnati C, the NFL, you know, you talk about people acknowledging, but I remember the first question you ever asked Rex Ryan, and ever since then, he always, looks to you for that closing question and the kind of respect that he has, you know, for you because of what you know, you know. And Rooney, you know, you said something that was just so, I laughed when you said it. You said, you know, golf is like watching grass grow. And I said, you know, damn, you know what I mean? So I said, because the great Arthur McKinney Jr., referee, when Mike Tyson was at that last fight, and it was a very boring and dull fight, and Mike told the referee, took McKinney to work. He said, you know, it's like watching grass grow. And it just says a lot about you guys. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, Trust in God Radio Network, live from Fort Lauderdale. So we're about ready to close it. Gentlemen, some last thoughts and last ideas. What's on your mind? What do you got to say that you want to get out before we get back on the air again? What's on your mind, Ronnie?
Well, Doc, Carmelo Alvarez, even though I think that fight could have went either way with Trout the other day, and, you know, obviously where he was, and I guess, you know, obviously based on, you know, where he was and his performance, obviously did enough to win, because the other guy would probably have had to knock him out to get the Duke over there, or at least beat him by a wide margin. I think that he's ready for that big fight that he's been campaigning for with Floyd Mayweather. I think we never got Mayweather-Pacquiao, but we may get Mayweather-Alvarez, and I look forward to it. I look forward to seeing how that fight unfolds. I think they're going to start to beat the drums for that fight, and I'm anxious to see what comes of that. As far as the NFL, as the great Sea Wings would say, hey, we're going to be ready to see what takes place in the soap opera that is the New York Jets, and we also want to see what takes place with the Giants, who had a subpar year with subpar performances, seeing if they can bounce back, and, well, also what they do in the draft along with the Jets. So we have lots to look forward to, Doc. I look forward to doing it and being able to speak with it with you, C, and the gang.
So, you know, Rooney, before I get the wings closed, I'll never forget, you know, we had a show a couple months back, and Wings was always the gracious and finding something of a positive nature. Talked about, you know, Rex Ryan being a good coach and a guy inspiring the players. And you know, he said, Rooney, see, why can't he inspire him to a couple of wins, you know, a couple of times?
One thing at a time.
And Wings, it's your thoughts. What's on your mind? What do you want to say before we get back on the air again?
Just quickly, Doc, enjoy yourself. You definitely miss stateside. You always miss. Every time we get together to do the show, it's like having that old Sunday dinner and you're down with family. It's something you look forward to every week. Just the wealth of information that all of you guys, Lady A, bring to the show and give to our listeners out there and to one another. It's an experience. It's an experience that's different each and every week. It's just, you look at the three or four New York teams, the Yankees, the Mets, the Jets, the Giants, and the Rangers and Islanders. The Rangers are fighting for a postseason spot there, a
Wish them the best of luck. It's been a drought for a very long time with the Rangers, with the Knicks, also with the Nets. I mean, the last playoff game played in Brooklyn, I think, was back in 1955 or 56. So, big kudos.
You're talking about the 1956 was the Dodgers and the Giants, Dodgers and the Yankees. Dodgers had won the World Series in 55 for the first time ever, and they finally beat the New York Yankees. And in fact, in 1955, Roy Campagnolo won the last of his three MVP awards, 51, 53, 55. And in 1955, you had a situation where New York garnered all the MVP awards. Yogi Berra won another MVP in the American League. And 1956, you had both teams. It was the beginning of four straight years for the Yankees to be in the World Series. The Yankees win the World Series in 55 and 56. The Giants win the World Series in 54. And then the Yankees came back in 57 and 58. So you had a run of 5 years in a row where a New York team was in the World Series, and you had a three-year period where a New York team from both the leagues were in the World Series. So the Nets have done well, but the Nets will never be indeed in my heart like they were when they had Julius Winfield Irvin out there. And then they kind of really crushed things up again when somehow they lost Jason Kidd. But, 1956, last time that Brooklyn was in a situation of a playoff or World Series atmosphere, when the Brooklyn Dodgers, in defending their first ever World Championship 1955, lost again to the Yankees in 1956, the year in which Mickey Mantle won the Triple Crown, led the major leagues in just about everything, and he captured the first of his three MVP awards as he won it again in 1957. And that's about it. Gentlemen, hold on. We're going to Larry Hardy see close, and then we're going to just we'll talk for a couple of minutes. We're going to be closing. Billy Paul is going to Desio. I was trying to catch him. Well, we'll have that for you. Billy Paul is going to be, as you know, he closes
out. Thank you
out
for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world.
Marvin Gaye.
In despair.
He has to say.
Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time.
When the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
We're going to come back to Marvin. But Rooney, close us out on the Sports and Depth Nation here, live from Fortaleza, Brazil. Rooney? Rooney's in the studio already. So with that, then, we'll get on back to Mark. Back Stanley. Blog Talk Ready. On the Custom Card Radio Network.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time.
When the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
The bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life.
But let's live, everybody.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
That. Rooney, you still with us?
Indeed I am, good doctor.
Rooney, close us out.
Doc, the Sports In Depth Nation's been here. The Sports In Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doc.
You know, Rooney, ladies and gentlemen, Live Talk Radio, Sports and Depth on the Trust and Government Network, we're back here next Sunday from 11 to 2, bringing you sports with an in-depth perspective, also an in-depth look, not only the sports, but the people that play it. Mel. Self, Smith Jr., a.k.a. Bruce Buffer, Lewis, the Heart, Nate, B. Baseball, Double Barrel, Carol West, the Disco Kid, Dusty, A.K.A. Brown, Lewis, Mitchell, and the Sea Wings, and the First Lady, for the 88. I'm your host, Doc Stanley, and by my heart, you thought, live your life today, never go far tomorrow. I still persist, my third question is, what are you doing for serve to others? We take the space of the public say, and by my heart, God bless you all. Trust the God. And we close. We fall. We compete. Until June 5th, Valentine's Day here, San Paulo on 12th. Good night, Rio de Janeiro on 12th day. It's Jonah. I'll be talking. It's nothing to say. And close to the really fall. Doc Kelly, and by my heart, God bless you all. Trust the God. Thank you.
Now, baby, it leaves back home.
just and sit it all. Hit it all. But now I know that home is a woman to call my very own. There's a sin crying over me. Cause this time, baby, I will flee. There is no place left for me to roam. I just had to know what there was to be. Now I know that was eventually. Cause when you've got someone who waits for you while you go, you should try to hold on to that. You should try to hold on to that. You should try to hold your own.